That's right. Welcome back once again. It is the 126th installment of The Perish of the Patriots. The wait is over. I know y'all been anxiously waiting all week. It's like, is it Tuesday? Is it... See, regular people wait for the weekend. Listeners of this show wait for Tuesday. That's what everybody waits for, Tuesday. Well, the wait is over. We are back. 126th installment. Believe it or not, Perish of the Patriots. Right here in Radio Albion. Glad you joined us this week. If you're new around here, you're going to find this a fun show. It's a serious show. We still find things to laugh about, even as we're in these insane collapsing society time. We're all about keeping our sanity here. We're all about keeping our faith. We do have a Christian specific segment. The sermon, if you would, later on, that's about halfway mark in the show. But you're not going to want to miss either one. I mean, even if you're not a Christian believer, you're going to want to stick around for the Christian specific segment, probably. If not, well, I don't know. Then don't. I don't give a shit. But what I do give a shit about is this show is supported by financially by the voluntary support of you. That's right. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. This is the part where I shill for your shekels. We've got Bitcoin. We've got snail mail. We've got Monero. All that's at the bottom of the description page, which you're probably not going to read anyway. So you don't have to read the description page. You can just shuffle on down to the bottom and you'll see we've got those there. If you got another weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email. Email's down there. I'll do my best to get you a address for that. And yeah, drop me a note as well, you know, because we do have this thing called the Listener Supporter Mailbag. One of my favorite parts of the show, speaking of which, we're getting right into it. Mr. TGPD, more dough for the show. Very, very much appreciated, as always. Hope things continue to go well for Mr. T. Also, hi, Dan. In one of your recent shows, you talked about the Genesis creation. I wrote this paper, and there was a paper included, a few years ago to pass out to fellow Christians. Most don't like it, but they never explained to me why. They don't know what to say because it shatters their beliefs. Thought you might like it. God bless, Tony. And yes, I did read it. It was like four type pages. Obviously, when I can sit here and read it, read it here on there. But yes, I did read it. And there was a couple things I did find interesting that I thought I'd bring up. Because I don't have to read it to bring up the interesting things. And I think everybody can follow along. You know, again, when it comes to the whole thing about a day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years is like a day, I think the important thing that people miss is what's being relayed with that. In that time doesn't exist in the eternal. So the temporal was created from the eternal. So you get that gray area and you're trying to relay the information that God created this world, this universe that we live in a orderly step-by-step manner. It was created. He was the creator. He didn't just willy-nilly throw something together. This was done in an orderly, sequential fashion. But yet it was created from the realm of eternity. So you're trying to relay the understanding that this was created in orderly sequential fashion, but it wasn't created from time. Time was not created from time. Time was created from the eternal realm. So you wind up with this gray area. I hope I'm not sounding like a complete batshit crazy kook here with this, but I understand in my mind what I'm trying to explain, and I don't know that I'm doing a really good job of it. But you have that gray area. Because everything in this realm, distance, everything we understand about the universe, the common denominator that binds it all together is time. But God lives outside. God dwells outside of that realm. But you have to explain that this was created in an orderly fashion by him in a systemic manner. In a systematic way, he created these things. But yet, how long was it? Well, it's a gray area. It was created from the eternal realm where time doesn't exist, but he was creating the temporal realm. So you try to explain it as saying, well, 1,000 years. 1,000 years. It was like a day. But I mean, time, as we know it, didn't understand, it doesn't apply to the Lord. This is just relaying the idea that it was created in a sequential, systematic manner, but you can't get hung up on the amount of time. And the other thing is in your paper, you were talking about, you know, the Pharisees persecuting and opposing and ultimately pushing and getting the execution of Jesus because they were holding these positions of power, which were undue. They didn't deserve them. They were fakes. They were phonies. And I thought that was really good. But as is so often the case, this gets my mind to thinking and pondering and taking another step further. They were doing this to keep their positions of power. We know this. And we know from the story of the execution that Pilate made it a point to wash his hands. It's funny how you have these people who claim to be Christians today, and they'll sit here and say, well, it was Pilate's fault. It was the Romans' fault for executing Jesus, even though this was all instigated, promoted, and pushed by the Jews. I mean, we know this. This isn't, I mean, it's clearly spelled out. I mean, I don't, there's not even an argument to be made here. But you'll still have people say, well, we still can't blame the Jews. It was the Romans that did it. But to get back on point, you were talking about how they had this undue influence in this undeserved position of authority and power. They were fakers. They were usurpers. And I was thinking about the deal that was done, because when Pilate washed his hands, says, hey, okay, his blood is on your heads. This is on you. Again, and sometime back, I couldn't even tell you what show it was because it's been a long time ago. We talked about how this was like almost like a court hearing of setting up a new contract, a new covenant. The whole crucifixion story is a step by step. This takes place and then this takes place. And all of these things that are happening are significant. And this too is significant when Pilate says, this isn't on me, it's on you. And they respond, yes, it's let his blood be on our heads and on our children and our children's children. I don't have the exact verse in front of me. If I got a word out of place, don't criticize, don't hate. What they were saying is on all our generation, not just on us, but on all of our generation, all our descendants that come after us, let the guilt of his blood be on us. But I was thinking about this from what you were talking about, and why were they doing that? They were doing that in exchange, what? To keep their temporal realm power, their positions of authority, their undue influence, okay? Their influence that was disproportionate to who they were as a percentage of the population. But again, they said, let the curse be handed down to every generation after us, to all our descendants. But they're just taking the bad side of that. I was thinking about this. They were taking the deal extended down. It seems like such a mystery. You know, when people get hung, it's such a mystery. Why do the Jews seem to have this such an amount of unbalanced, undue influence on society? They always seem to wind up controlling banking with undue influence. And you look at all the times they get kicked out of countries over the years, and it always the same thing. They wind up getting all this undue influence. Why does that come so naturally to them? But if you think about it, as that was the deal they made. They took on the curse in exchange for this temporary amount of power, this temporary amount of undue influence. Now, if you think about it, if you truly believe in the Lord and understanding the eternal realm and the temporal realm and all this, is a really shitty deal, because time flies by. You'll become more aware of that the older you get. You know, we always have this idea, you know, they make TV shows or movies, you know, and you talk about the concept of someone, quote unquote, sold their soul to the devil. And the concept is always the same, you know, well, in exchange for money, fame, women in this life, they sell their soul to the devil. And then at the end, when they get older, and it always goes by way faster than they think it will, then they always want to back out of the deal. It's kind of like that, but not, but because Jesus said specifically, you are of your father, the devil. So there really wasn't anything to sell here, but this was the deal that got took on in exchange for continuing, because they continued to take on the curse on themselves, but also on the generations after them. In exchange for that, they got to continue in the generations after them, wielding undue influence and always seeming to manage as a group to get into this disproportionate amount of power and influence than what would normally be rightly deserved. And I thought that was an interesting thing to think about, that was kind of like a mini subset, you know, like a subclause in how this is all played out, for taking on the curse and the guilt for that. They also achieved this undue influence. They continued on that usurping and having this undue influence that they had at the time of the crucifixion has carried on down through the generations, but so also is the curse. And again, as a true believer, you got to believe that's a really, you know, you get mad and you say, well, they got out of this undue influence. But if you really are a believer, you have to realize that is a really horrible deal. And again, if you're young, it may make sense, because going back to like these stories, these movies, whatever you read or have watched about someone who sells their soul to the devil for money, fame, women, glory, or whatnot, they always get sold the deal when they're young. Well, because, and which makes sense, because when you're young, it seems like a long time. But the older you get, you realize, man, this life is just over in a blink of an eye. It's just as the scripture says, scripture is always truthful. You know, it's like grass in the field, like the flowers of the field. They bloom up, but then the wind blows and then nothing, like it seems like the next day it's all withered up and dries up and blows away. That's how life is. And you'll realize that the older you get, it goes by quickly. Once you pass that point where you realize it went by real fast and there's fewer in front of you, it gets faster. There's fewer days in front of you than there are behind you. You realize it seems like this thing is going faster and faster. But anyway, no, interesting stuff, and I do appreciate it. Obviously, I do appreciate the financial support. And again, thank you for any of y'all who are not shy. Pay your tithes. It does help out a lot, and it is very much appreciated. And it's a lot, makes for a lot of moral support. So again, thank you for all that. And so as we wander on off into our general discussion, we can clearly see that they're all warmed up. Now, we know they're really ginning up the variants of this, the doom virus, the doom virus. New variants, Delta Doom. We got the Delta Doom warming up. We got the doom virus. And we know, and they're already saying it, they're setting the stage now. This stuff isn't hard to figure out. They're setting the stage when the cold and flu season comes back around in the fall. They're going to announce that there's new waves. They're going to punish everybody by locking it down. They're pushing for everybody to take the mystery vaccine. And they're going to blame those of us who refuse to get it. They're going to tell, they're going to lock everything down, never explaining to those who have taken the vaccine why they have to be locked down. They're supposed to be protected, right? They're not going to explain to them why you went and got the shots. And now you're supposed to be vaccinated, why you have to be locked down too. See, they're not going to lock down. A lot of people have this notion that when the next round of lockdown inevitably comes, when the flu season comes back around, that some people have this notion that they're just going to try to like lock down the unvaccinated and punish them, but they're not. They're not going to do that. They're going to apply the social pressure. And the way they do that is to punish everybody, all of us. You see, if they just lock down the people who are unvaccinated, if they said, oh, if you're unvaccinated, then you have to be locked down, but everybody else that's had the shot can be free, that's not going to work. Because at this point, and especially by the time we get here in the fall and in the early winter, you know, those who are holdouts, they're like, I'm not getting vaccinated, that's not going to work. We're the type of people that ignore their lockdowns anyway. That's not going to work. No, they've got to apply the immense social pressure. So they're going to lock everyone down. They're going to punish everyone. They're not going to explain to the vaccinated why. Not that an explanation is necessary, because most of the vaccinated are complete freaking sheep. They're going to do whatever they're told anyhow. They're going to lock everyone down and they're going to say that, well, we didn't want to do this. But you see those people over there, they're putting the whole world at risk. They're going to kill everybody because they refuse to take the vaccine, which is so easy, virtually painless, and absolutely free. It's absolutely free. And yet, pharmaceutical companies making this are making billions. But it's free for you. It's absolutely free. Just take it. You got to take it. Take it. Take it. Take it. Then apply this immense amount of social pressure to get you to take the mark of the beast, the vaccine, to submit yourself, to put your faith in the experts and the science and the democracy and our values and all of the rest of it. It's just a culmination. It represents a culmination of accepting it, accepting their lies and submitting to the lies. Even if you don't, thing is, if you submit to it, even if you know it's bullshit, you're still submitting to it. In fact, it's probably worse if you know it's bullshit and you submit to it. I don't know what the ultimate side effect. I always say we don't know. I've seen people put out these propositions. It's going to sterilize people. It's going to do this, but they don't really know. I'm sure the ones doing it have a pretty good idea what it does. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not about protecting the health. That's why the government's making sure it's free and want to get a shot in every arm. But we really don't know. We don't know what these adverse side effects are going to be. I think they're going to be extremely severe, ultimately. I don't know what it looks like. I'm not going to pretend to know what it looks like. I just know I'm not getting the damn thing. Y'all do you. I'm not telling you, you got to do whatever I do. You're your own free thinking person. But I'm telling you, there's no way in hell. Ultimately, they've got to get the number of people vaccinated down, because I hear talk of, like, you know, people say, well, they're going to put us in camps. And that may be what it comes to. But you have to understand that can't happen until they get that down to a manageable amount of people. They're not going to put nobody in no damn camp if 43% of the population has refused to get vaccinated. That's not a manageable number. It's not a realistic number. They can't do that. They've got to get it down. They got to get that down to a manageable number, and then they can use force to isolate you, to get you out of society. Because, see, it's not just about, oh, well, they want you to take the shot so you can be a part of the experiment. It's if they can get you out of society as a whole, then what do they have left in society? If you're isolated, whether it's in a camp or they create an island for you and shove you off on that island and isolate you from society and leave you to die, they're left with a completely manageable population. Because once the population that's left is submitting to the masks, submitting to the lockdowns, have given up all of their freedoms, and have even submitted sovereignty over their own bodies, which, by the way, if you're a Christian believer, your body is supposed to be a temple of the Lord, and you have allowed that temple to be desecrated. You have allowed them to come in and take command over your body instead of tending to it as a temple of the Lord, but we're not getting off into the Christian specific segment yet. Then they're left with a manageable population that will do whatever the hell they're told. They've submitted to the masks, they submitted to the lockdowns, they submitted with all the ridiculous mandates, they've submitted to having their children taught that they're evil and they're white and all the bad things in the world are their fault. They've submitted to child trannyism. They've submitted to all of these things and ultimately submitted to the last thing they had. They gave up their children. They gave up their rights. They gave up all of these other things, and they ultimately gave up sovereignty over their own bodies. They have a population that ain't going to stand up against anything. They could declare that you all got to go march off and stand on your heads in a lake until you drown, and they're going to pretty much do it. That's what they're left with. They got to get the undesirables, the riffraff that might get the other people to thinking. They got to get them isolated, shut up, and away. Shut up. Got to be censored. But see, it's ultimate. They don't have to worry about censoring you if they have you isolated. They're already isolating us. They've already isolated us successfully online. You have alternative social media platforms such as Gab and this and that, but you're isolated. You see, you're not allowed in the general population of Twitter or Facebook, but you can go over here on some site that all the other malcontents are on. They're good with that. They're good with that. They say, oh, they want to take down these sites, but they don't really. I mean, they want to fish. They want to fish and troll through these sites and try to, you know, sweep up some people to demonize, you know, white supremacist terrorists. That's our new domestic threat, we're told. You know, they'll troll through there and look for some idiots to fall for blatant Fed posting, you know, to make a news story once in a while. But all in all, they don't give a shit if you're over here in the isolation area. They've done it online. And ultimately, they're going to do it IRL. Or at least that's their goal. I was thinking, and this got me thinking, about how these things that everybody's upset, well, everybody that doesn't like it is upset about, but how they couldn't come about if certain things hadn't happened. What do I mean by that? Okay. Well, everybody now, everybody to the right of Stalin, or what, I don't know, Stalin would be considered a neo-Nazi today by Globo Homo. But you have all these normicons and Republicans and such, you know, pissing and moaning about the quote-unquote the wokies. The woke culture. Oh, these people. Oh, they're at it again. They're demanding this. They're demanding that. Everybody in the corporation just so happened to be giving them what they want. It's just, we just don't understand it. But you see, that would have never been possible if right-wing trolls had never been banned from social media. The narrative that this woke, and I hate the term, honestly, but that's what we got, so we'll deal with it. The notion, see, this wokeism, this narrative that you have these swarms of people, and they're not. They're a very small amount of people. Most of the time you dig into it and it's like a handful and they're all, you know, tweeting back and forth and generating this fake outrage. But see, none of that would have been allowed to happen. That narrative could have never been created if right-wing trolls had not been banned from social media. Because y'all remember, if you've been around long enough, you remember back in the day, they were trying this. They would come up with this crap and right-wing trolls would swarm into their feed and make them run away behind a wall of blocking So they had to stay in their little area there with other people that think like they do because they can't counter the truth, especially when the truth is presented in such a funny manner with memes and triggering. Oh, you're a Nazi. And somebody puts up Hitler memes or whatever. You know, I mean, they can't counter that. And they couldn't create the narrative that you have this powerful, these wokies, they're able to just magically change the culture. Of course, the culture is changing because that's what the regime wants to do. But nonetheless, that narrative couldn't have been created. Now, I saw a story the other day, and y'all probably have too. They had this whole thing out in California, and the spa, and these women are in the spa, and some guy is in there and whips his dingus out in front of them. And, yeah, of course, the guy's like, you know, yeah, I'm a woman, so y'all can't be judging me, and whips his dingus out in front of women and little girls. And, of course, the Koreans running the spa, they get all kinds of hell, and all these people are giving them hell. And the Koreans running the place are trying to explain that, well, we can't do anything. That's the law. But yet, everybody's directing and venting their anger at the Koreans running the spa trying to make a buck. Like it's their fault. Like they could break the law. And as a result, some people showed up to protest at this spa. Again, like it's their fault. They're just following the law. Why the hell they're protesting the people who are going along with the law and not those who have enacted the law, I don't know. Maybe because people are stupid. And these people were protesting the idea that a guy could go in there and whip his dingus out. It's tallywhacker. Can we call it a tallywhacker? out in front of women and little girls. Just because he claims he's a woman too. Because this is the insane culture we live in. And people showed up and protested this. And the Antifa showed up. And a big fight ensued. And they beat up these protesters. And again, you have to realize this narrative. They have this narrative created that Antifa is a scary force. They just show up. Of course, they're a scary force because the police never do anything to them. But you see, that couldn't have happened if Charlottesville hadn't happened. And then ultimately, January 6th of this year hadn't happened. It was the next stage of it. But you go back to Charlottesville. Because everybody focuses on Charlottesville as this turning point, which it was. But they don't look at a turning point from what? You see, before Charlottesville, the right wing was starting to show up on the streets. And they would kick Antifa's ass and run them off. You remember the whole base stick man thing and all of that, and it got all of this momentum, and they would put the Antifa, they would put their Antifa bots out there to look scary, to try to create this narrative. And yet the right wing was showing up and kicking their ass. But then you had Charlottesville happen, and so you had a situation where with the collaboration of the government really on all levels, the police, they created this situation. And even then, you know, they funneled all of these people in as a counterforce. And even then, the right wing held their own for the most part. But then afterwards, you had only the right wing were arrested. Only the right wing were thrown in prison. Only the right wing was prosecuted. And all of the left wing went away. And that killed the resistance. Because it's pointless now. You see that on January 6th, the people tried to go up and protest. You can't even protest now, much less confront these people. That was the next step. But you go back to Charlottesville, it made it to where they could create this narrative that you have to be afraid. Why, if you dare say anything and protest what's being done, then these people will show up and physically commit violence against you. Of course, you can't question what the hell the cops are even doing there if they're allowed to just freely go do this shit. You're not supposed to think about that. They can't create the narrative unless they create the situation for it, I guess is what I'm saying. They had to shut down any people's ability to show up and counter them. Now they can create the narrative that you should be very afraid. You should be very afraid of these people. You can't go out and say that you don't want that to happen. You can't say you don't want your little girl to be, you know, eye to eye with some guy's dingus. Because if you do, the scary force is magically going to show up with no coordination, no funding, no nothing. They just show up and attack you, and the cops just manage to somehow not ever do anything to them. Can't question it. They had to create this situation so that they create their narratives. Speaking of the January 6th protesters, isn't it amazing how, you know, the media now just offhand, they've gotten everyone to accept this narrative that you know, this was an insurrection. It's always the word used now. the insurrection, the January 6th insurrection. How the hell people showing up and essentially supporting the current government at the time, which was supposed to be Trump, how that is an insurrection by any definition of the word, but words have no meaning in clown world. But speaking of the January 6th protests, and understand, I'm very sympathetic. These were people that were showing up. They put it on the line, trying to save their unsavable country. They hadn't quite grasped that it's beyond saving, but now it should be clear to everybody. But they showed up. They were trying to do the right thing. And look at the outcome. They're still rounding people up from this. And again, though, this relates back to Charlottesville. I mean, I don't get me wrong. There's no point in holding hard feelings or, you know, but when Charlottesville happened, you have to wonder how many of these people being basically normie cons were like, you know, didn't want to be associated, didn't want to even talk about it, didn't want any part of that, because the same media that they say they don't believe claim these were all white supremacist neo-Nazi haters. And we know that now, with hindsight, we know January 6th was a setup. We know that now, benefit of hindsight. And we know, ultimately, with benefit of hindsight, that Charlottesville, too, was a setup. And now, you've got these people. They're in jail with these horrible charges under horrible conditions, being charged with this, I don't know, insurrection. I don't even know how that works that way. But again, we've got people at Charlottesville that these people were probably largely unsympathetic toward. You have James Fields spending the rest of his life in prison because he got in a car wreck and a fat woman in the crowd had a heart attack and died. And yet, no mention of that. And now, see, because it was ignored, they didn't want to have anything to do with that. But see, now it's escalated up to this point. And it always has to, anytime you talk about January 6th, it has to be pointed out. I don't understand the masochistic nature of people, because you have to point it out that Trump threw these people under the bus. Absolutely. I see these people. There's still people flying their Trump flags and talking about Trump. And Trump is Trump. Any use you had for the man has to be gone after what happened on January 6th. I don't know how you look at it any other way. I mean, why would you put any faith in the man? He had the power to issue, before he left office, issue a blanket pardon for those people, and they wouldn't be sitting in jail right now. But he didn't do that. Because why? Because the media that he claims to be, you know, antagonistic towards would say bad things about him. You look at all of the people he spent no shortage of time pardoning people while he was 4 years in office. These people put it on the line for him. The one woman losing her life. We're still not told exactly who did that or the situation around it. They have all the surveillance footage. They won't release any of that because it would run counter to the narrative. Otherwise, if it reinforced their narrative, they would have released it right on the spot. Instead, they have their photo ops where their guys were breaking out windows, even though right over here to the side, the police were waving people in. But we had to have the photo ops of the windows being broken so that they could create that narrative. But Trump could have issued a blanket pardon for these people, and he didn't. He threw them under the bus. Why? Because he would have caught heat? What? Were they going to hate him more if he did that? I don't think so. He's supposed to be the leader, but it's all about himself. I'm going to call it like it is. A leader takes the hit. You know, I mean, Hitler went to prison over the beer hall push. I mean, so, you know, Trump couldn't even issue a pardon for his people because they would say mean things about him and really throw a fit and call him names or whatever. If you're going to be a leader, you never leave your people out hanging. Doesn't mean you can save all of them, but you do what you can. And if that means sacrifice on your part, you can't ask other people to sacrifice for you. You can't ask other people to go out there, put their necks on the line. He told these people, show up to this protest. He told these people, march down to the Capitol. And when it all went south, he said, that's not on me. That's not on me. Look, we got to call spade for spade. Yes, it was an FBI setup. Yes, it was deep state. It was blah, blah, blah. But he still had the power and he refused to do it. That's not leadership. I'm sorry. I hate to crumble your Trump worshiping dream, but that's not leadership. Leadership is you look at this situation, you say, oh my gosh, this wound up being a setup. I led my people into a setup. What am I going to do? Well, they're probably going to run me out of office anyway, but come what may, one way or the other, you got people whispering in your ear, oh, if you just leave it alone, we'll somehow overturn the election and, you know, we'll overturn this fraud and we'll prove it. But if you issue this blanket pardon, then, you know, you might lose office. Look, a leader says, those are my people. Come what may, I'm pardoning them. Let the chips fall where they may. And I'm sure that was maybe one of the reasons he didn't do that. I'm sure he had, oh, probably I can imagine, Jared Kushner was probably telling him, oh, well, hey, we can probably overturn. We know this was fraud. We're going to prove this in court. Don't worry. But if you issue this blanket pardon, it's just going to complicate things. And once you get, you know, once we overturn the fraud, then if you want to, you can pardon those people. And of course, they didn't overturn shit. And these people are now powerless, rotting in jail, their lives destroyed, their lives ruined, all because they were trying to do the right thing. All because they were trying to do the right thing, and he threw them under the bus. That's not leadership. Like I say, you can't save every person and every situation, but in a situation like that, the correct answer is, I'm pardoning them, let the chips fall where they may. Let the chips fall. I'm not leaving my people to be destroyed, to have their lives ruined. Because it could be politically expedient for me. And it wound up not being anyway. It's how these deals always work out. They promise you something that never comes about. And now what? We're supposed to be, well, it's obvious they're working hard, working tirelessly to try to find a way to bring up Trump's charges, rather, on Trump. And we should be, what, sympathetic about that? I'm not. If they charge Trump and put him in jail, I don't give a shit. Why do you owe loyalty is always a two-way street. Why do you owe loyalty to the man when he showed no loyalty to these people who were literally rotting in jail? Literally, they've already lost their jobs, their livelihoods, no doubt, marriages, families, and they're sitting in jail being tortured. And what? Whoa, if they bring tax charges on Trump, we should be all up in arms and upset? No, screw that guy. I'm sorry. Because that's not leadership. It's time to move on. But people are desperate. I understand it. People are desperate. You know, everybody tries to do the best they can, and yet there's people misleading shills, leading them astray at every turn, throwing them under the bus. People are doing the best they can, but you have to accept reality for what it is. I understand people being hung up that somehow Trump is still doing something or going to do something. The only thing he's going to do is something for Trump. No, I mean, that's been proven. He's not going to do anything for the people. He's not going to do anything for those who show loyalty or put their necks on the line. He's just going to do stuff for himself. And that's not leadership. That's simply selfishness. So we got to move on. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment this week. Got to get that done. So, yeah, you know what to do. Hopefully you're still hanging around for it. I think you'll get something out of it, whether you're a Christian believer or not. But either way, if not, glad you joined for the first half of the show. Got 30 minutes in. Could get an hour, but that's on you. Anyway, you know what to do. Let's get in there. Fill those pews. It's time for this week's Christian-specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as we get all prepped up for this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots, I guess we're going to open right up with a reading from our Bibles. We're going to do the 31st Psalm, and then we'll get into today's discussion. And I think ultimately we're going to hit some stuff that's going to be really, really important for us to bear in mind, especially considering the times that we live in. So without further ado, yes, we're going to read the whole thing, by the way. Don't worry, it's not too long. So we're going to the 31st Psalm. In thee, O Lord, do I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in thy righteousness. Bow down thine ear to me, deliver me speedily, be thou my strong rock, for an house of defense to save me. For thou art my rock and my fortress, therefore for thy name's sake lead me, guide me. Pull me out of the net that they have laid privily for me, for thou art my strength. Into thine hand I commit my spirit, thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God of truth. I have hated them that regard lying vanities, but I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in thy mercy, for thou hast considered my trouble. Thou hast known my soul and adversities, and hast not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. Thou hast set my feet in a large room. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. Mine eye is consumed with grief, yea, my soul, my belly. For my life is spent with grief, my years with sighing. My strength faileth because of mine iniquity, and my bones are consumed. I was a reproach among all mine enemies, but especially among my neighbors, and a fear to mine acquaintance. They that did see me without fled from me. I'm forgotten as a dead man out of mind. I'm like a broken vessel. For I've heard the slander of many. Fear was on every side. While they took counsel together against me, they devised to take away my life. But I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. My times are in thy hand. Delivered me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. Make thy face to shine upon thy servant. Save me for thy mercy's sake. Let me not be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon thee. Let the wicked be ashamed, and let them silent in the grave. Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak grievous things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. Oh, how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that trust in thee before the sons of men. Thou shalt hide them in the secret of thy presence from the pride of man. Thou shalt keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he hath shewed me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes. Nevertheless, thou heardest the voice of my supplications when I cried unto thee. O love the Lord, all ye his saints, for the Lord preserveth the faithful and plentifully rewardeth the proud doer. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all ye that hope in the Lord. Now, as this is written, this is a Psalm of David. David was in a lot of trouble. People were pursuing him for his life. He had basically, and it was because of his own sin, because of what he had done. And he always, as you go through it, you see that he always accepts that of his own iniquity. He realizes that this isn't just happening. You know, this isn't just coming about by happenstance. He understands this is a result of his own failures, and he always accepts that. And yet at the same time, he puts his faith in the Lord, and he talks about putting his faith and hope and trust in the Lord. Now, what does this mean to us today? They want you to not have faith in the Lord in these trying times. One of the things they really want you to not do is put your faith and trust in God. How did we get to where we are today? How did we as a nation, how did we as a people, how do we come to find ourselves in the position that we are in today? Have we not forgotten God and put our faith in the works of our own hands, just as a person would an idol if you read the Old Testament? I read a story the other day, and it was written by some woman whose name doesn't even matter to me because it escapes me and I don't have it sitting in front of me. And the story, of course, as you know, if you've been paying any attention, I hope you're well aware by this point. If you're a listener to this show, of course you're aware. But everything in this world we live in is satanic. It's inverted. Truths are called lies. This is something that is just the overriding, overarching theme of the society we live in. What's good is called wicked, you know, and every sort of wickedness and degeneracy is praised as that which is good. Lies are called truth. Truth is called lies. And this whole article was talking about what's wrong with all of these people. That means you. They believe in all of these lies. Well, and it's always interesting because they sprinkle a certain element of truth. And you do. You have all of these people that do believe in these lies. But then the article went on, of course, to invert all of it. You see, the lies that these people believe in are the things such as Joe Biden. They believe that Joe Biden is not the most popular person to ever run for president ever and received more votes than anyone ever for president of the United States. Why did they not? These people, they believe the lie that the vaccine is somehow not 100% safe. Why did they believe these lies? You see, they take the truth and invert it. They take the lie and place it on the altar of truth and say, oh, this is the truth. The vaccine is 100% safe. Why are these people skeptical? Why did they believe these lies? you pick through these things, and if you've got to have a strong heart to do it, because they take the idea that, oh, we have all of these people that believe in a lie, which is factual. But then they flip it around, and the ones that believe in the lie are the truth bearers. And those that believe in the truth, they are the ones that have succumbed to great lies. Why do these people believe in the lie? And this person went on in the article to start building up. Perhaps it is because we have been inundated with lies our entire lives. Well, this is true. This is true, of course, not in the way that the person writing the article meant it. And I said, one of the problems is that even from birth, we have been hit with a huge lie, with the big lie. And they began talking about the big lie. And if you didn't know any better, you would think this author of this article was going full Mein Kampf. And they were fixing to, you know, set off an H-bomb there. the H-bomb. But they were going on. It's just building it up. We have the people of this country, we've believed in this big lie that we've been fed since birth. We've been indoctrinated with the big lie. And of course, when you get to the climax and she reveals to us the big lie we've all believed in, she doesn't fail to go full atheist spurg. It's because of magic sky people. They believe in magic sky people. That's the problem. You see, religion is the problem. The big lie is not something, say, such as the Holocaust, that there were 6 million turned into lampshades and soap and gas to fix. That's not the big lie. The big lie is your faith. The big lie here is your religion, is your belief in the Lord. And I thought about this. I pondered this for several days and turned it around and upside down and kind of thought about this. It's stuck in my mind. They want you to abandon all hope. They want you to abandon your hope in the Lord. Now, but you see, they're not leaving you with nothing. What do they tell us? They don't want you to trust in the Lord. And we're going to get into why you have to at this point, because we as a people are much like David. In this sense, you see, David got full. And why did David make his original sin? Well, he got full of himself and he started thinking about, you know, getting this mindset that all that he had and all that he achieved in his high position was essentially brought about by his own hand. He started forgetting the Lord and he got all kind of caught up in that. And it led to his downfall. It led to this trouble that he was going through. And here we are as a people, we're in much a similar situation. The question is, are we going to do as David did and realize, wow, we have screwed up and put our faith and trust in the Lord, even though we know that what's happening is a result of what we have done as a people. Now, obviously, I don't mean you personally. we're the remnant. We're trying to survive here. But as a people for generations, this has been done. Do we act as David and accept that and try to turn away from it? And even in all this trouble, and even knowing that, you know, this has come about because of what we have done as a people, but instead turn away from that and put our faith in the Lord? Or are we going to listen to them? Are we going to abandon our trust in the Lord? Because what do they tell us? Trust the science. Trust in the experts. Put your faith in our democracy. You see, they want you to abandon the Lord, God Almighty, and they want you to replace him with their idols, our democracy, our science. Let's trust the science. Don't trust the Lord. Trust the science. Trust our experts. Abandon your hope in the Lord. You're just being silly. You're being stupid. You're believing a lie. Believe us. We're the truth tellers. It's all so obvious on his face. And yet, how many will fall for it? How many will proclaim this very same thing and posture as though they are intelligent? David was put in a position where he was on the run. He was hiding. He had essentially lost his position. And where are we today? Where are we today? If God created a situation for David, a situation came about for David in which he had no choice but to trust in the Lord. Now, the Lord wasn't like, you know, be mean to him or something. It came about by David's own actions and his own choices. He admits this over and over. This is essentially what almost the entirety of the Psalms is about, is understanding, accepting the fact that the situation, this dire situation, came about because of his own sin, but also understanding that these people who are after his life are not righteous. They're not doing this great thing, and he deserves it. He's not saying, I'm going to lay down and be a doormat. Well, I sinned, so these people ought to be able to just go ahead and destroy me. I'll just give up. He understands what's come about is because of his own failings, but he also understands that these wicked evildoers who are seeking his life are not doing the work of God. They're doing it for their own personal gain. They're looking to destroy him. Out of their own wicked schemes, they're devising these wicked schemes and these traps that want to catch him. They're just looking now for anything they can get him on. And he finds himself in a position where he's got no choice. He's got no choice to trust but to trust in God. Because why? How did this start? Because he got to thinking too much of himself. So now everything's been stripped away. He's got no choice. He can trust in the Lord or just give up and die. Is that not similar to where we are today? Now, we look around and some people will still act like we're going to turn this around. We're going to do this with our own hands. But does that even look realistic? Or has it not a situation come about where you have no choice but to trust in the Lord? Now, mind you, nowhere in here does David just lay down and give up. It's the opposite. He prays that God will destroy these people who are after him, these wicked schemers. They'll fall into their own trap, fall into the pit that they're digging for him. He's continuing to struggle against it, but he understands. He understands the score. He understands the reality of the situation. Nowhere in here is he deluding himself that, oh, well, I'm going to go in there and I'm just going to forcefully take back my position because I can do it. Because that would not be understanding what's taking place around him. I think a lot of people need to grasp that situation where we're at today. We're in a position to where we have no choice but to trust in the Lord. There's no other hope left for us. And why? Because as a people, we abandon God. Now, I say that statement, and you may be tempted to sit here and look at these kook, you know, global homo promoting commie leftists, whatever you want to call them, and say, yeah, look at them. But it isn't just them. I look at this system. I was thinking this morning how we look at this system, and I was thinking, you know, this system ultimately, what the founders set up, when you look at the way it played out, it wound up being a pretty stupid system. Would have been better off if George Washington or one of the other founders or Jefferson or whoever would have just declared themselves the new monarch of America. The system they set up was pretty stupid looking back at it with the benefit of hindsight, granted with the benefit of hindsight. But the point I wanted to make is when I make that statement, the founding fathers, you know, really screwed it up with the system they set up. A lot of you who are listening who consider yourselves patriots are probably, shall we say, triggered by that. May even get hate mail over, hey, you're just some stupid podcasting guy. What do you know? You can't compare to the brilliance of the founding fathers. And what do we have here? Again, the faith is in man. For a lot of so-called patriots, they've created an idol out of men. They've created an idol out of the founding fathers, not understanding that they were just men and they viewed themselves as such. I always take a chuckle at the idea that when asked, how long do you think this new system you set up is going to last, Jefferson's response was along the lines, obviously I'm paraphrasing here, but it was along the lines of, well, I'm real optimistic that it's going to last at least 20 years or so, you know, to the next generation. And when asked, why do you think it won't last longer? He's like, well, every generation is going to have different problems and it's up to them. No generation should be bound to a system that benefited the previous generation. I mean, a system that works to solve the problems of generation A, when generation B comes around, they're going to have a different set of issues and they're going to want to probably set up a different set of systems. They're not bound to what generation A set up. And here we're down here about generation F. And we're still like got people like sanctifying and oh, the founding fathers. It worked pretty good for what they were trying to set up. But of course, what? But in a few short years, when the civil, what the quote unquote civil war came about, what they had set up was already basically thrown in the trash can. And you fast forward to clown world today, and we have our democracy and our values and who we are and all of these other vague terms that we live under. How many years have I had to listen to people blabber on about how America is this exceptional nation? How do you get convinced of a notion that's so retarded, such as your nation consists of an idea? How do you get even convinced of something that stupid that nobody previously ever thought that way? How do you get convinced of this new idea that your nation is nothing more than an idea? It's a piece of paper. It's this concept. It's this nice generalized belief in these abstract concepts. That's what your nation is. How do you get convinced of that? Well, because you're exceptional. You see, the rules that have applied through all of history to all of nations don't apply to you. See, America's special. I've had to listen to this nonsense for years. No matter what iniquities as a nation this country plunged itself off into, it didn't matter. Because we're exceptional. You see, the rules don't apply to us. And still you see that today. You'll see these people say, well, it's take an argument such as about immigration. And the so-called conservatives will say, well, the problem's just the illegals. We can take in all these people as long as they get the proper piece of paper. Well, why? Well, because, they believe in the idea, and that's who we are. They promote the lie as well. They just word it slightly differently. You can point to history, how every nation winds up collapsing when they let everybody else come in. And when you point out that this is the pattern through history and this is what happens, it's not like we don't have a record of what happens. Ultimately, whether the person is considered on the political left or the political right, their answer will come down to some form of, yes, but we're different. We're exceptional. Those rules don't apply to us. We're above the rules of nature. We are above the rules of God. Because the rules of nature and how nature work are the rules of God. God established nature. We talk often about the natural order, but who made the natural order of things? And why are these cement laws that cannot be broken? They cannot. You break yourself if you attempt to break and overturn these laws. They are unbendable. They are unbreakable. They are the laws of nature. They were established by God. This is the way things work in this realm that we live in. But we're different. This pride and this arrogance as a nation, it's different. And here we are. Now, if it wasn't so serious, it would be hilarious how absurd and stupid this country has become, and the West in general has become. It's an utter absurdity. It's like a really bad comedy skit. It is so absurd and stupid, except that it's so deadly and it's so serious. We're surely in a position where you have no choice. I mean, really, what are you going to do? You're going to go do an armed insurrection and go, form your militia and march on Washington, D.C.? Does that sound realistic? And people, you point these things out and people get all upset. I piss people off all the time when I point out how silly this idea. Well, you're just scared. You're just a coward. No, I'm just pointing out what's realistic. That's why I would never make it in the military, by the way. If my commanding officer said, okay, go charge that nest of machine guns, I mean, your chances are pretty much zero that they're not going to cut you down, but go do it anyway. I'm going to be like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. There's zero chance of survival there. Well, you're just a coward. No, I'm just not stupid. I'm not going to go blindly bonsai charging into a machine gun nest with my Bowie knife or samurai sword or whatever the hell the case may be. I'm not going to do that. It's stupid. Why would I do that? You go. How about this? I'm going to point my gun at you and you go run to the machine gun nest and get cut down and die for your country. I'd never make it. But people will say you're a coward when you say, what are you going to do? Because they can't think outside that box. They can't bring themselves to trust in the Lord. Now, remember, when we talk about trusting in the Lord, doesn't mean you lay down. Never did David quit struggling and quit trying to find a way to overcome these things. He didn't just lay around and wait for God to fix it for him. That's not what we're talking about here. But you got to ultimately put your faith and trust in the Lord. that he might open up doors for you, open up opportunities, have them fall into the very pits that they themselves dig for you. But you got to get that mindset. What choice do you have? You going to vote harder? You got people talking about that? Well, Trump's going to run. Trump's going to run again in 2024. And you look at these people and you say, well, okay, so do you think they stole the election in 2020?
Yeah.
Why would they not steal it in 2024? Well, we're going to vote really harder next time. I mean, it's absurd. But they have nothing. They have no idea what to do because they're still putting their faith and hope in men. Trump is the new God. Trump is the new God that we got to put all our faith and hope. Trump can do no wrong, and Trump we trust. It's silly and it's absurd, but that's where we are because they refuse to put their faith and trust in God. They don't think he can do it. They don't think they're in a lot of ways. Many so-called Christians have no more faith in God than the stupid bitch that wrote this freaking article talking about, you believe in sky fairies. You believe in the big lie. They don't actually have any more faith because when it comes down to it, they would rather put their faith in Trump. They would rather put their faith in their inanimate object of a gun. They would rather put their faith in this crazy notion that they're somehow going to create a militia and march on Washington, D.C. and take over the government or whatever the hell, or that, oh, the Q patriots in the military, they're the ones, they're going to save us. Because at the end of the day, they don't think God can do it. They don't have any more faith that God can do it than the woman writing about mocking your belief, mocking the Lord, that you believe in magic sky people. Spaghetti monsters, whatever the hell, flying around the sky. You see, you have these Christian believers that ultimately, at the end of the day, they don't think God's going to do it either because they don't really think, maybe they really don't actually even believe any of this shit. This is the sifting. We are going through this sifting. I keep saying it and pointing it out. Jesus said it plainly that at the judgment, you're going to have all these people that are like, oh, Lord, 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 we believed in you. And he says, I know you not. Get the hell away from me. In fact, literally, get the hell. You're going to hell. But we said the words. We said we believed in you, but they didn't believe. They didn't think he could do it. Are you going to be as King David? I'll tell you, well, we're at where we're at because as a people, what we've done over generations, I mean, it's not a personal gift. You don't have to take it like on yourself and feel bad and shitty about yourself. But understand, as a people, this is the consequence of what has happened. This is where we are. Are you going to do as David? We got a guideline here. Okay, how do we handle that? Well, let's see. Continue to struggle. Continue to try to figure out some way to turn it around. But ultimately, understand that we have to put our hope and faith in the Lord. We got nothing left. We got nothing left. They control the money. They control the corporations. They control the mass media. They control the middle management government. The oligarchy, the global homo runs everything. That's the reality. Not blackpilling you. I'm telling you to open your eyes. They run everything. We got nothing left but to put our faith in the Lord. That doesn't in any way mean giving up. It's the opposite. It's the opposite of giving up. But that's where you're at. You've got no choice now. You either put your faith in the Lord or you're going to perish with the rest of the world. That's it. Knowing this, does it not make sense that the last thing we've got left now is to put our faith in God, that they want to take that away? This article I read that got me thinking about these things, this article that I read, it's directly an attempt through mockery, belittlement, inverting the truth with the lies to make sure you steer away from putting your faith in the Lord. Instead, they want you to trust the science, trust the experts, have faith in our democracy and who we are. Embrace the lie. Embrace your doom. Do not put your faith in the Lord. We have a situation now. This is what you've got left. You can put your faith in the Lord. You can put your faith in God. You can continue to reach out for him. Why you continue to struggle? I mean, again, no point are we just, does this mean you just give up and lay down? David didn't do that. You continue to struggle, but you understand that you can't do it by your own hand. And that's the reality. Again, any haters that want to sit here and say, oh, you're just telling people to do nothing. I'm making it a very clear point to say that's not what I'm saying. But I'm telling you to understand the reality of the situation. You don't have any way of turning this around. I'll say it again. You have zero chance with your own strength of turning this thing around. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. If you abandon your faith, then you lose everything. If you abandon, your last hope is to put your faith and trust in the Lord. That's it. I mean, what's the option? Those sit here, if you listen to this and you're shaking your head and you say, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay, well, what's your other option? You're going to trust the experts? Putting your faith in our democracy? Are the founding fathers going to come back to life and ride in and rescue you? Or maybe the white hats? Yes, the QAnon, the real patriots are in control and the military is. They're going to come and save you. We're somehow going to save ourselves with our own hands. I mean, there's your choice. They want you to give up the last thing that's giving you hope. This is about destroying that last thing. But you can grab onto the hope, which is a real hope. It's not a false hope. I wouldn't sit here and say, put your faith in the Lord, believing that it's all bullshit and I just want you to feel better. It's not a false hope. You can put your faith in the Lord. But they want you to, that's the last thing you've got. We're in a situation now. That's the last thing you can cling on to. Or you can do as they want you to do, which is abandon that last shred of hope, that last rope that you can hold on to. Because really, if you abandon that, what do you have left? Might as well just, I don't know, go join the Pride Parade. Just can't beat them, join them. Go join Globo Homo. Why not? That's what's left. That's your choice now. There is no middle ground anymore. Your choice is you can join them. Of course, those who are part of it are always worried that they're going to be the next one to be eaten. You can join, just full on join. Just go along with it. Or you can hold to the last hope that you have. You can put your faith in the Lord. And the choice is ultimately yours. We're going to wrap up on that note. Do appreciate it. Thank you again, all of you. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Your voluntary support for the show is very much appreciated. We're going to back on out of here. Don't forget, on Fridays, I do generally sit down. We didn't last Friday, but Fridays, sit down, have a daily nationalist with Sir Longshanks. It's always a good time. So always, if you make the time, be sure and tune in for that. And of course, be sure and tune in next Tuesday right here. For the Parish of the Patriots.